ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
I'm now going to speak on something which is not directly spiritual, which can be called arop bhakti, which just like brushing your teeth is not spiritual. Of course, in Zen, anything could be spiritual. You could have the Zen of brushing your teeth, but Zen, we're not here to propagate Zen Buddhism, some nonsense ideas. But yeah, everything can be spiritual if it's dovetailed with Krishna. That means, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the instructions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Rupa Goswami about how to live as a Vaishnava, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu included brushing the teeth, which I often use as an example to show how something which is seemingly not at all spiritual becomes spiritualized if it's done in service to Krishna. So that's the point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu included that in the daily activities of a Vaishnava, which pretty much everyone does, devotees and non-devotees, but it becomes spiritualized. Everything that person does becomes spiritualized when in relationship with Krishna. So I'm going to talk about farms. Farms and farming are not in and of themselves spiritual, but when done in the service of Krishna, it becomes spiritual. And of course, Srila Prabhupada very much wanted Krishna-centered farm communities. Farm, 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 he said at one point. He very much wanted that. So I'm going to speak about farms in relationship with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. I'm speaking from, it doesn't look like a farm, does it? It's a riverside. The farm is just up the hill a little bit. you can't really see much of a farm here. There's the sandy banks of the river Himavati in the hills of Karnataka. Now it's called Karnataka. Previously this was the Hoysala kingdom, was it? This particular part of Karnataka. And temple built by the Hoysala kings, who are still famous and well known in this area. The name is known at least, is the Chennakeshav temple, about an hour's drive from here, about 30 kilometers, as we're in an area of winding roads, hill roads, so it takes about 45 minutes, 1 hour to go, about 30 kilometers. And the famous temple there, still very well known and very popular in this area, is Chennakeshava. Chenna is a Kannada word which means beautiful. So it means beautiful Keshav. Keshav means Krishna, who has, well, it has several meanings, one of which is he who has beautiful hair, who's the killer of the Keshi demon, and there are various meanings of that name. So this budding farm project, or it's just in its incipient stage, is called Chennakeshav Gram. And at least everyone in this area, if we say the name Chennakeshav, they'll know what it means. Maybe the Muslims who recently emigrated here from Kerala, who are filling up this whole area, maybe they don't know, but at least the Hindus are sure to know. So it's an incipient or budding project. Especially in the beginning stages, there's a lot of work to do. Farm means work, not a place for lazy people. I gave a whole talk on that in the underground, in Hindi. A lot of work to do to establish it, but we're confident that a good project can develop here. Good means devotees living together happily, chanting Hare Krishna. That's the whole point of the farm project. So devotees come together and live together. Simple living and high thinking, Srila Prabhupada said. That was his motto. He didn't invent that motto, but that was the motto that he promoted. So by Krishna's grace, these farm projects are going surprisingly well, considering that there were so many doomsday talks that it's not possible, can't do it, but so far so good. And every day spent in chanting the holy names of Krishna is an auspicious day. So far it's all very auspicious. One of the aims is self-sufficiency. That we shouldn't have to import so many things. We should produce everything locally. Of course, everything is almost everything, because always there'll be some things that we may have to bring from outside. Just like I don't think that locally these tiles that are being used for building the houses, they're Mangalore tiles maybe, but Mangalore is 4 hours drive away from here, so traditionally that wouldn't be very practical in the times before automobiles. That wouldn't have been very practical to bring tiles from Mangalore. So like that, there are very few communities anywhere in the world, even traditionally, that had no intercourse whatsoever with the outside world, and no trade, and not bringing anything in. But the aim is to produce our daily necessities, of which most prominent is food, to produce that locally. So we're still a long way to go with only two families, but let there be more families. Yeah, then she can have someone to play with. Huh? So in the pursuit of self-sufficiency, you may be wondering why I have this red mark on my nose. Often in the West, people ask, oh, what's that mud on your nose? Or what's that mark on your nose? In India, people don't. They're used to sadhus or religiously minded Hindus having marks on their forehead. Not so much on the nose also. But here in our Gaudiya Sampradaya, we're used to seeing the yellow tilak, which is made from Gopi Chandan, which comes from Dwarka. But previously it wouldn't have been possible to bring Gopi Chandan from Dwarka to all over India, what to speak of all over the world. So it's just another part of self-sufficiency that we use the local clay for tilak. That's all. So I'm doing that. It's a small way, but it is a very visible way of using local products. This in Shastra are given directions on various kinds of earth that can be used for making tilak. And one of them is earth from an anthill. So this is from a local anthill. And it's strikingly reddish in color. So there's a... Now, one thing, one topic which comes up regularly, I'm going to talk about. This is farm katha, cow katha. One topic that comes up regularly is that cows which are not desi gai is a Hindi term which means indigenous Indian cows. So a topic that comes up quite often is that Western cows are not cows at all. They are, sometimes we've heard they're pigs Well, they are buffaloes, which isn't a very scientific statement. Of course, we're not very great fans of science, but more accurately, we might say that we're not fans of scientism, or the claim that science can reveal all knowledge and we only need science based on empiric observation, and we don't need anything. We don't need to believe in anything beyond that. We don't need to believe in anything metaphysical. So that isn't. But science. Well, if science says that water is formed of hydrogen and oxygen, we have no reason to contest that just because it's what's called a scientific statement. Empiricism is also one method of gaining knowledge, and it is the major method that we use in our day-to-day life. Talking about water, then early in the morning, with a lamp, you can see that. I thought there's so much dust in there that I realized it's water particles. Does that go on throughout the year that you have this mist early in the morning? So to say that a Western cow is not a cow, it's not really accurate. What we can say, and this is the claim, that in Shastra, or the knowledge that has been codified and written down in India, we can say, and Shastra doesn't only refer to metaphysical topics, there are many topics concerning this material world also. There are certain words for cow, such as go, dhenu. What else is there? There are so many words, it's just not coming to mind now. Any other words you can think of? Anyway, there are so many words for cows. So there are descriptions of cows, and one of them is that they have a hump, which is just at the end of the neck, as at the beginning of the torso, and below the neck, or hanging from the neck, is the dewlap. You have to have a photo of a cow to show that some skin which hangs down, and that's not present in Western cows. So the problem is that the word cow is translated for what is a dhenu or a go, and for the Western animal, which has many of the same characteristics. So you can say that according to Shastric tradition, what in the West is called a cow is not the kind of cow, or not, it's not a dhenu that's as described in the Vedic Shastra. But then if we use the English word cow, then we have to say it's a cow, because Western cows, I mean, they have, apart from that, they have many of the characteristics of Indian cows, and they look similar. Well, they look distinctly different also. But then if you see, just like there are different breeds of Indian cows, and the two which are prominent in Gujarat, which are the Gir and the Kankareds, they look quite different, don't they? They're very, their nature is different also. What's going on? You have to hold it? Okay. Well, the Kankareds tends to be fierce, and the Gir tends to be placid, except where there are lions around. The lions are afraid of them. If we're going to use the Western understanding of the term species, then we see that the Western cows, they interbreed with Indian cows. They don't interbreed with pigs or buffaloes. To say that they are pigs or buffaloes, that's what I'm saying, it's an unscientific statement. Cows are best known for giving milk. And they are both in the West and in the East, cows are kept primarily for giving milk, for what they give. Now, as far as Srila Prabhupada is concerned, Western cows are cows, because he criticized that they're slaughtering cows in the Western country, and they don't have what in India are called cows. They don't have that kind of cow in the Western world, except in Brazil there are a few cows that were introduced from India. So Srila Prabhupada certainly recognized the Western cows as cows, and he said that devotees should drink milk and make ghee and milk preparations, and that you could say that's one of Srila Prabhupada's great contributions, maybe not one of his better known contributions, or ones, not one that devotees talk about so much, but his culinary contribution is huge also. No one knew Indian sweets or Bengali sweets in the West, or all kinds of preparations Srila Prabhupada popularized in the West. Unfortunately, in our ISKCON in the Western world, they've more or less jettisoned the Indian cuisine that Srila Prabhupada gave, plus the habit of sitting on the floor to eat. But Srila Prabhupada actually suggested bringing Western cows to India at our Indian rural project, specifically in Mayapur, and interbreeding them, which was a big thing at the time in the 1970s, that was really picking up at that time. Bringing Western cows to increase the milk production, because Western cows give more milk. Although in general it's seen that the Indian cows, the nutritional qualities of the milk, especially the not just the nutritional qualities but the health-giving properties of the milk that Indian cows is, according to many Ayurvedic practitioners and others, that the cow's milk from Indian cows is much better. And there are many benefits of the Indian cows are much more tolerant of the climate here, and tolerant in general. They don't complain, whereas Western cows, they make a lot of noise when they're unsatisfied. But Indian cows tend to tolerate more. So there are pros and cons of keeping the Indian cows or the Western cows, and there is a strong feeling in India nowadays, more and more, that people, when they want, you'll even find advertised that ghee from desi gai, the people will advertise that you can get ghee made from the milk of indigenous cows, because people are prepared to pay more money for that because they think it's better. And then there's also the case of A1 and, what is it? A1 and A2 milk. And A2 milk is the one that's digestible, and it's easily digestible, and it has various health-giving properties. And the Indian cows all have that, whereas the Western cows, the Jersey and the two main cows which have been imported in India, Jersey and Friesian, which in America is called Holstein. But in India, they just call them all Jersey cows, although they're very different, actually, the way they look and the kind of milk they give and everything. What's the main one in Australia? Probably Holstein, is it? Jersey. Really? Because they're much more difficult to, health-wise, they're more difficult to keep, but they give very rich milk. Is it? Well, in England, we always heard something different. They prefer to keep the Holstein. They give plenty of milk compared to Jersey. But the Jersey milk is very rich. In England, the two breeds which are popularly kept, which give a very rich milk is Jersey and Guernsey, these two breeds. They're smaller. So, whereas the Western cows, these two breeds, which are popular in India, they give the A1 milk, which is more difficult to digest and doesn't have the health properties and can lead to, and they say excessive consumption can lead to all the diseases they've said which arise from cholesterol and this and that, that comes from drinking that kind of milk and not this kind of milk. It's the San Mafia. Although there are some breeds there are some Western cow breeds which also give A2 milk. It's not that they're all giving the wrong kind of milk. So anyway, there's a lot of feeling in India at the present time about re-establishing pure breeds and having milk only from the Desi guy, from the indigenous breeds. But it's too much to, it's ridiculous to say that the Western cows are not cows. I'm just saying this because I know within ISKCON also there are devotees who are promoting this and say it's not a cow at all. But in our enthusiasm, we shouldn't make ridiculous statements, actually, or Hindutva-inspired statements. It's all part of the Hindutva idea that everything Indian is good and everything foreign is bad. Another important thing that advocates of cow culture here in India say, and Srila Prabhupada also advocated very much, is that the milk is not all in all. The cow dung and the urine are highly beneficial, even from cows that have stopped giving milk. And apparently I saw something recently, I don't know how true it is, that even the cows that stop giving milk, then the nutritional value, and that means nutritional value for the soil, of the cows that have stopped giving milk, that increases, the value of their dung and their urine increases very much. And you can see where cows graze, then afterwards if you put that land under cultivation, the crops grow very well. So it's not just the milk, and that's even an economic reason not to slaughter cows. Because the farmers think, well, I have to feed the cow, but I don't get any income. If the cow is not giving milk or not giving enough milk, but even the urine, and apart from the ethical and religious reasons for not killing cows, even the value of the dung and the urine is so much. And there's this whole ethos of cow products, products made from cows, and some of our devotees are selling that also. And I'm told in Hyderabad they have a very good market for cow dung, cow urine. If you say it's from Desi Gai, from the indigenous cows, they can make good profit for it. So that's, but then there are others who say, well, you should let the urine go in the soil, and that will nourish the soil. But anyway, that's an important thing to show that cows are economically viable. It's not economically unviable to keep cows, as it's often considered at the present time. You have to treat the cow as an economic unit, because that's the way the world runs on, and you have to feed them, and it costs so much money to feed them. Previously, it didn't cost anything to feed the cows. It was free, because in every village had common grazing ground and there were forests, and there would be one cow man would take all the cows from every house in the village in the morning, take them out to the, milk them, take them out to the fields, bring them back in the evening, milk them again. And there was no cost, just you had to give a little something to the cowman, that's all. Nowadays, with all the common lands occupied and the forests cut down and converted into coffee estates all around here, then if you have to buy feed for the cows, that also becomes a very expensive proposition. And seeing as the feed is also grown with genetically modified seeds or with chemical insecticides, that also goes into the, that reaches the milk that you get. So it's not so pure anyway. So it's because of the economic policies that came about with this massive, at one point in many parts of India, the milk was not widely available. Always it was in Karnataka. I used to hear when I first came to India, I was traveling in West Bengal, and the milk, there's no milk. Milk is something people heard about. Literally, you wouldn't see milk. Or if you did get it, it would be very thin, highly watered down buffalo milk. But we always heard in Karnataka, in Bangalore, there was plenty of milk. So devotees used to say, yeah, we get milk. They bring the cow right to your house and milk right in front of you. Those days are over in Bangalore. But there was a great shortage of milk. Indian people love to drink milk. They're not vegans. They're vegetarian. Many of them are vegetarian, but they're not vegans. So they want milk. It's very, very central to the whole culture of India, especially the Hinduism and the rituals. Ghee is required, milk is required for abhishek of the deities, daily abhishek. In the food culture, it's very much required. So there was a great shortage of milk, and then the government brought in, what do they call that, the white revolution? It was the green revolution and the white revolution of cow breeding, bring in foreign cows. But it was all based on economic principles. And so nowadays it's very difficult to keep cows from an economic point of view. To keep a cow throughout life, it's very difficult because economically, it's because grazing the cow, where's the grazing land? And there's also the point of breeding. You get so many bulls, and bulls are no longer used as they used to be used for agriculture and transport and work, just like for expressing oil from seeds. The bulls would do that, but no longer done by chemical methods mostly. So in this way, if you have a bull, then the bull is sold off just after it's born for slaughter. So these are various economical obstacles that we have to face. And the devotees often ask, well, you're doing these farm communities, where are all the cows? We should have many, many cows. But practically speaking, that may be a nice sentiment, but we have to see how to do it practically. This Hebri project ran into so much difficulty because they took so many cows and there weren't enough devotees to look after them. And I was told so many cows died. Did you hear about that? It's horrible. So many cows died. Oh. In New Vrindavan also I heard, this is many years ago, they just let the cows, they wander in the forest in the winter when there's only snow, because they wanted them to die, it seems. Isn't that horrible? How devotees could do that? But that's, they can't be devotees, but the point is that it became economically difficult for them. And as anyone can note all over the world, what's the main religion? Is it Islam or Christianity or Hinduism? No, it's money. It's everywhere, you know. You know, you're a chartered accountant in Australia, which is a remarkably unreligious country, isn't it? People, and there's just not in, people are not interested. They're nice people, but they're no interest in religion. But anyway, when you go to advise someone, you were mostly doing that financial advice for small businesses and this and that, was it? And what religion you are, whatever your religious beliefs, it doesn't matter, because it's money, money. That's all. You're there to advise about money. So that's the main thing for people in the modern age. And if it doesn't work financially, then, or economically, people are not interested. And the main reason why this Sai Baba is the main deity of Hinduism in the present time, because people think they get all their material desires fulfilled. So these farm... anyway, that was just a little talk, just because devotees often ask me about cows, other Western cows, pigs. No, they're not pigs. They're not Indian cows, that's obvious. But it's... Oh, and there was this... there was a conference organized in California less than a year ago by ISKCON devotees about cow protection in the Western world or something like that, at which the Subramania Swami, the famous ideologue and politician from Chennai, he was invited to speak. And he said that Western cow, so I'm told, at an ISKCON function, he said that these Western cows, they're not actually cows, according to Shastra. Therefore, it doesn't matter if they're slaughtered. And Prabhupada said it's the most sinful activity in human society. Because they're killing cows, therefore there are so many wars. There cannot be peace in human society if cows are slaughtered. Prabhupada didn't say because they don't have a hump on their back, they're not cows. He said, they're just like our mother, they give milk, we're nourished by that. So that's true whether they have a hump on their back or not. So devotees often ask, why don't we have so many cows? But then there are these, what we can say, practical considerations. And if out of sentiment we just increase the herd size, then it becomes problematic. And we found that at Gauragram also, that happened. Many cows were brought. And then they were given away to a Goshala because we didn't have the manpower. You were looking after them, right? And now again they're asking, what are we going to do with the cows? Because we have so many cows there and we don't have the devotees to look after them, and we're spending so much money to feed them because that area is so dry and we don't have the... wherewithal to grow enough food for them. So we want to develop this, but we have to see the way forward practically also. Srila Prabhupada was, he very much promoted cow protection and farms. He's always a very practical person. He even said that you can use machines if necessary just to get things started. Ultimately he wanted to move away from machine culture altogether, otherwise what's the point? But it's just like you brought these tiles. Now, how did you bring them in? By truck, I presume. You didn't have someone. First of all, you wouldn't get anyone. You couldn't find anyone with a bullock cart to bring them, even if you wanted to. It's in the present situation, it's completely impractical to bring them in by bullock cart or elephant or whatever the traditional means of transportation might be. So you have to be practical also. Srila Prabhupada, one of the reasons that he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, how he was able to do so, of course, the reason is that his pure desire to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all the acharyas, but practically speaking, one of the reasons he was able to do so was because he was intensely practical. He was a very practical person. So devotees often think that going to the farm and going to the land is not practical. But Srila Prabhupada was an extremely pragmatic person. And actually it is practical when we consider that our necessities of life are food, clothing and shelter, roti, kapra, makan, as the common term is there in Hindi. what are our basic necessities, and they can all be produced from the land. They all have their, or even if you're living in a city and you've never seen a cow in your life, when there are plenty of people like that, children growing up in the city, they've never seen a cow, a real live cow in their life. But still their milk comes from, believe it or not, from cows. And food, even though it comes wrapped in plastic, which we see in the Indian cities now, which was unimaginable even a short time ago, comes wrapped in a plastic bag. Ultimately, it comes from the earth, unless it's grown hydroponically, which is another, that means just grown in water. There's some method of growing things. You just grow it with water, that's all, and you put some chemicals in the water. But anyway, the way that God set up the world is that carrots grow in soil, actually sandy soil could be quite good for carrots, but there's only sand here, not up there. But there is grit in the sand. Anyway, you'll have to see, but it's a bit, it's clay, it's a little heavy, carrots like a little lighter soil than that. But anyway, the point is that vegetables come from the soil. It comes from the earth, and the traditional cloths, cotton is the best known. Otherwise, there are so many different things can be used. Jute can be used for cloth. Hemp can be used for cloth. Wool comes from sheep, which roam the earth, and like that. Leather is also one kind of material that can be used for clothing, not generally recommended for Vaishnavas, but can be used. For shoes, it's very, very practical if you're going on a rough soil. So, but they're all grown in the earth, this jute, hemp, cotton. You can also make by going and drilling in the earth or drilling in the sea, bringing up oil, having a huge factory to process it, and then you make various polymers and make clothing out of that. But the system that God gave is that you grow, everything comes from the earth. Sarva kama dughamahi, in the Bhagavatam it said, Srila Prabhupada often used to quote it, that all that we need is produced from the land. So Srila Prabhupada just wanted to show practically that that can be done. And it just shows how far people are away from the God-given way of life that they think it's impractical to live on the land, whereas it is actually the most practical thing. And especially when in the cities, which can happen at any time, there are disturbances in the matter of bringing food from outside. Either there's some strike by which they stop all the transport moving, or there's some problem in the flow of oil to the country. India is an oil dependent country. The oil comes from, most of India's oil comes from the Gulf countries. So if there's any disturbance in that, then within 2 or 3 days, if the transport or business is, or the transport is disrupted, or there are so many things, the water supply is disrupted, then there's a major crisis for the whole city. There are economic ups and downs, so that people they can't afford, many people can't afford dal because it became so expensive, which is, in Hindi or in Bengali, if someone's very poor, they say that they're just living by dal bhat, just by rice and dal. But now they can't even afford the dal. They're considered such staple foods. People, but in the country, by Krishna's grace, your food is there. So Srila Prabhupada is very, very practical in making these projects. And we see that devotees are becoming very happy by living on them. So we invite all the devotees to come and live. Families come and live, produce food, produce children, and make a spiritual revolution. And this is a very practical way, just to show people how to live simply and happily with Krishna in the center. That's all. Simple message. High thinking, then I may be giving some more classes, and then we'll discuss more about topics of Krishna directly more. But even we're just talking about making farms, even that in itself is high thinking. How is it high thinking? What's high thinking about living on a farm? But the very idea, let me leave this demoniac, hellish city life so that I can live in an atmosphere which is conducive for Krishna consciousness. That in itself is high thinking. Farm, 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 farm. Quoting Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Did you ever think, Ram Apramaya, you'd leave that city life and you'd be living like this? All that study you got to become so qualified, and now you're working like a farm, you're like a farm laborer. What? When you were going to school and college, if you told your parents, in future I want to be a farm laborer, what do you think they would say? They wouldn't be very happy, huh? So now you see, you became a farm laborer. And you're smiling and happy. Just see. All those years you spent studying to become an accountant, and now you're working on a farm. By choice. By choice. Most people don't have any choice. They're just driven by the system into living a life that they don't want to live. They say you should, the big thing is you should be free to choose, but the people don't, they're not free to choose. They're forced to get some kind of job or live on food stamps or whatever. In America they have food stamps. But devotees are coming here out of their choice, that I want to live like this. I want to live with devotees and chant Hare Krishna. I don't want to be part of that hellish society in which everyone's just in anxiety all the time. Bangalore, you go many times, I know. I think Bangalore people are the most miserable in all of India, just from the looks on people's faces. I visit all the big cities, of course. And Bangalore, strikingly to me, seems to be just the look. Yeah, you see people, the look on their faces, and just miserable. It looks like to me like the same look in the West that people have on their faces, just drained of any. Of any hope or life, or just working like automatons, like robots, and completely frustrated, but just going on with life because they have to. That's all. I more than any other city in India, I get that in Bangalore. And just a generation ago, Bangalore was supposed to be the nicest city in India, the garden city. People are so nice, and gentle, relaxed way of life, clean air. It's all gone now. About what, 2-3 years ago, some woman was murdered there. There was the first one, I think. No, not this Gauri Lankesh. That was some IT worker at night or something like that. So people were shocked because how could it happen in Bangalore? Here also, I was just discussing with that man. Who was that? Who drove me? What's his name? Shankaram Shetty. So he told me about 3 years ago there was a shootout and there was some murder here. So I asked him, was that a land dispute? He said, yeah. So that also can go on anywhere, because people are just, the whole culture everywhere in the village, it's become just like the town. We were going in the town and just driving through in the village, and we saw the the young girls, 8 years old, are wearing clothes like the young girls in Bangalore, which are not proper, actually. Their style of clothing, not good. The Bangalore culture has invaded, even in the villages. So, along with the farm life, we want to give the good culture, the proper culture. Honorable life, respectable life. Not that the girls from the age of 8, just by their clothing, they're imbibing the culture of being a sex object for general use. Isn't it? By their very clothing, that's the consciousness that they're not thinking. An 8-year-old girl is not thinking like that, but unknown to herself, she's imbibing those values, if that's what you want to call it, non-values. So everything counts. The way we dress, the way we interact with each other, our aim of life, everything's important. So it's not just a matter of cultivation of vegetables, but there's a cultivation of consciousness, Krishna consciousness, and a whole value system that goes with it. Hare Krishna, anything you all want to say? Yes.
Indian cows are supposed to have the Surya Nadi, which they claim actually.
Indian cows are supposed to have the Surya Nadi.
That is what they claim.
What is the Surya Nadi? It's something new to me.
Actually, the hump where it starts.
That's Nadi means the vein system.
Which actually absorbs the sun.
I see. Yeah, I have heard of that. In the hump, it absorbs the energy of the sun. And it gives a yellowish pigmentation in the milk. But you get the yellowish pigmentation in Jersey milk. In what in England is called Jersey milk. It's very yellow and thick.
And that yellowish is actually the spiritual...
It may be. There are various things which are said to be scientific studies, but a lot of these Hindutva-inspired studies, I'm not sure. I'm somewhat doubtful of them. We hear so many things by chanting Om, it cures diabetes and all. I don't know. I'm suspicious of these. Is it Hindutva or Hindutva is not really the right word, but no, Indology is the opposite. Indology is anti-Indian. But whether there are actual scientific studies done according by scientific methods that Indian cows they absorb the sunlight in a certain way that transforms the milk, I'm doubtful if actual what could actually be called scientific studies have been done about that. But that's scientifically accepted, that the milk they give is that one bee which is more digestible. The least it could be said is it's more digestible. And according to Ayurveda, which adherents of Western science dogmatically refuse to accept any claims of Ayurveda, it's also much more nutritious in other ways. Yeah, the milk of Indian cows.
Is it wrong to or bad for health to accept milk from cows which are not Indian?
Is it bad for health to accept milk from cows which are non-Indian? I really can't say because I don't know what the science on it is. Of course, different scientists will do different studies and come up with different results. And you hear all kinds of things. Just like for so many years we heard cholesterol is very bad for health, and now they're saying, well, actually, cholesterol is quite good for health. It's just, you just don't know. It's just, there's one reason why many people have lost faith in science is because there's so many contradictory things that they say. Well, they say some cholesterol is good and other cholesterol is bad, and this and that, so we really don't know. But it appears to be an accepted fact in medical science at the present time that the 1A milk is not good for health. For so many people find it difficult to digest and they get lactose intolerance from it. Whereas 1B is much more digestible. That much. I haven't gone deeply into the subject.
Under those circumstances, is it good to avoid when there is no other option?
Is it good to avoid that when there's no other option? Well, generally we need some. Human beings need some animal fat. Contrary to what the vegans say. Within the vegans, they have to take vitamin B12 injections every so often, which isn't very natural. Because it's natural for humans to take some animal-based food. I'm not saying you have to eat meat, but milk is there. And you probably feel that yourself if you go for some days without any milk products, that you feel lack of nourishment. Yeah.
Just like human beings are in different mode, can we say that these Western cows are in lower mode?
Can we say that the Western cows are in lower modes, just like human beings are in sattva, rajas and tamas? Can we say that? Well, I don't, just like Kankraj, they seem to be a pretty aggressive breed of cows compared to Gir. So you could say that the Gir are more sattvic than the Kankraj. But then you find some Western breeds, just like the Jersey, they are very timid. I don't know if that means they're sattvic or maybe they're... When we say cows are in the mode of goodness, well, overall, animals are in the mode of ignorance. But some have a strong admixture of goodness, the cow has. Whereas the monkey is definitely not in the mode of goodness. There's nothing, and that's stated, right? That human beings in the mode of goodness, they're born in the mode of goodness, they were previously cows. And then lions, and they take birth as humans in the mode of passion, and monkeys, they become... They're born as humans in the mode of ignorance. So are the Western cows in a lower mode? Possibly, I don't know. It's very difficult to say exactly who's who and what's what in terms of the modes of nature. It's all very complex, isn't it? It's all very complex in the matter, just like who takes birth in what situation. Exactly to say it's very difficult. What's that? Gahana karmano gatihi. It's very difficult to work out exactly. Could we say in general the Western countries, they're supposed to be in lower modes of nature. But here in India we see some of the most horrible things going on at the present time, yeah. Such as rampant cow slaughter. So India is a land of spirituality, that's true, but there are a lot of there's cow slaughter, baby slaughter in the form of abortion, and female infanticide. So there. It's a very difficult age. Yeah, and in general we have to say that's there in Shastra, and we can practically see that birth in India is more, especially in a Hindu family, is more conducive for taking to Krishna consciousness and more conducive for pious life than is birth elsewhere. That's all. Just like we just had Ram Navami, and Hindus will celebrate it. Almost all Hindus will celebrate, unless they're completely secularized. They'll take note of it. Whereas in Australia, just like they have Christmas, but there's practically no religious connotation for most people. I'm just mentioning Australia because Barrett's sitting here, and you were how long there? 12 years? Something like that? 9 years, yeah. Had good exposure to that. Very different way of life.
So in the West, It seems that nature has given this particular breeds of cows.
In the West, nature has given these breeds. Actually, nature didn't give any breeds of cows. Breeds are made by humans. Breeds are made by humans specifically breeding animals with certain characteristics. Otherwise, the breeds, Kankrej is a mixture of two breeds, apparently, and the Komatome. So it was made from two breeds. They're just like you get so many breeds of dog. The Indian dogs, they're not any breed of dog. They're just wildly interacting with each other. But there are different breeds, and then those breeds have certain characteristics. Some dogs are good as guide dogs. Dogs are good as guard dogs. Dogs are good as shepherd dogs. So there are so many different dogs with so many characteristics. And the cows also have different characteristics. So breeds seem to be made by humans. Otherwise, how far in the past? Now, the Gir cows, they were there in the jungle, right? They were just there. Now they're bred. Otherwise, they were there. But other breeds, they're made specifically by humans. Take certain cows, and then they breed them in such a way that they develop certain characteristics. There are wild cows here and there. I don't know, in India, probably not. In England, there's one wild breed, which they've allowed them to remain wild all these years. Chillingham, I think they're called, somewhere up in northeast England. A few of them like that. So different cow breeds, are they there in nature? Gir may be like that, but just like Kankrej, that's an example. The cows you get in Udupi, those small ones, were they bred like that? I doubt it. Seems unlikely that they were specifically bred like that, because they're not so economically viable, are they, being so small, giving very little milk. But other ones you see, like these Ongol, they're good hard workers. The bulls, do you get them here? No, there must be some others, but they're very good for working hard. And apparently the cows give a fairly decent amount of milk also. Highly disease resistant. Oh, that's one great advantage of the Desi cows also compared to the Western cows, isn't it? They're more... Yeah, in general, the Indian cows are more tough than the Western cows in this climate. So what was your question? The cows were there in nature.
This idea of taking indigenous Desi cows to the West, it's all human manipulation.
Who said that about bringing Indian cows to the West?
That is what is presently done. No, I'm not saying in context of the lecture.
Oh, so there's some idea like that, because they give milk, which is of the 1B with milk? A2, sorry.
In the West, they are promoting Desi cows.
Is it? Who's promoting?
In general, they are...
Oh, the Western people have woken up.
They are disease-resistant. Indian variety is very disease-resistant, and they are very...
is this a modern... Mostly variety? Hindus in the West.
Hindus in the West, they want to bring Indian cows to the West. I must admit, I'm not up on all this stuff. I'm just speaking in a general way. I don't know the ins and outs of all this stuff. I just wanted to make the point, because devotees have asked me time to time, and it came up recently again, are non-Indian cows pigs or buffaloes? Sometimes they say pigs, sometimes they say buffaloes. But it's ridiculous. They're not dhenus, but they're not pigs. Okay, so we finish there. Hare Krishna. Ancha kalpa tarubhyas chakribhyas indubhyavacha patitanam pamanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.
Rigveda defines cow.
Rigveda defines. Is it?
Basically, comparing cow with all in Vedic literature.
different part of the cow or different Vedic literature.
Oh, I see. Oh, there you go. The Rig Veda. You got that? The Rig Veda defines the cow. So it's actually in the Mool Veda, not in some... I thought it might be in some Purana. Okay. So, Hare Krishna.